Good morning, everybody. I'm Carolyn Waters, and I could not be more excited to be hosting this talk today on social networking for writers. This is a really great subject because about a year ago, about this time, we hosted a discussion on marketing and publicity for writers. And at that time, the general consensus in the room was that, yeah, writers needed to have a website, they should have a Facebook page, they should blog if they can figure it out, and maybe even tweet once in a while if they could figure that out too. But what wasn't really clear, in fact it was practically opaque, was what was that going to do for you? You know, what was the point of it? Yeah, we need to do it, but why? And I think that our speaker today has really figured it out. So she's going to tell us why we should be doing it, and I think we have a lot to learn from that. So a few facts about our speaker. Gretchen Rubin is a lawyer who was clerking for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor when she realized what she really wanted to be was a writer. So after making that auspicious decision, she went on to publish 4 books, the best-selling 40 Ways to Look at Winston Churchill, 40 Ways to Look at JFK, and now the stupendous bestseller, The Happiness Project. And I started talking to Gretchen about doing this talk back in October, having been a faithful reader of her blog and her tweets, and knowing that her book was soon to be published in a couple months. And at the time, you know, we were kind of trying to come up with a name for the talk, and I suggested something like blogging into bestsellerdom or something really catchy. And you know, she very humbly said, "Well, I'd be a little uncomfortable with that title, you know, considering I probably won't, you know, achieve that." But you know, being the happy person that she is, she said, "Well, let's hope." And so, fast forward a couple months, and The Happiness Project debuts at number 2. On the New York Times bestseller list. And so I look like an amazing prognosticator, I have to say. So we're really, really happy. It has actually been on the New York Times bestseller list. It's still on the list 14 weeks later and doing really terrifically. So we're very, very happy for Gretchen. And I think part of that is clearly, no doubt, due to her great social networking prowess, which she's going to talk about today, to which she has thousands of blog followers. She has more than 12,000 Facebook fans, over 19,000, I believe, Twitter followers. I mean, these are numbers that I can't even fathom. I mean, there are like 10 of you reading my blog, so it's like really depressing. So I think we all have a lot to learn from Gretchen. So I want to ask everybody to give a warm welcome to our speaker today, Gretchen Rubin.
Well, it makes me so happy to be speaking here because I am a longtime devoted fan of New York Society Library, and most of this book was actually written on the 12th floor. And I haven't been coming lately because now I'm really, really much stuck in front of my giant 3 monitors at home because I do so much social media. But when I need to start working on my next project, I'm really looking forward to coming back here and working, you know, like 5 hours at a stretch upstairs. So I'm a huge fan of Society Library. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk very briefly about what I did and why it worked for me and give you some ideas about that, and also talk about community building and my community mantras that I use. I'm going to go very fast and cover kind of an overview so that then we can really drill down and talk about what's interesting to you, because I don't want to spend 10 minutes talking about how to get your blog up and running if nobody is interested in that. So I'll respond to your questions. But before I start, just to get a sense of where people are, how many people here read a blog regularly? How many people here have a blog of their own? How many people here read an email newsletter? How many people use Facebook with their friends? How many people have a Facebook page? How many people here use Twitter? Okay, that's very helpful. Now, before I start, I will say this. The two main reasons that writers tell me that they don't want to get involved in social media is they don't want to engage in a lot of self-promotion, because that's just not the kind of person that they are, and because it's a big waste of time, and they barely have time to do the work that they ought to do now. And what I want to try to convince you is that it's not about self-promotion, it's about engagement. And it's not a waste of time. It's a big use of time, but it is not a waste of time. And one of the challenges is to think about how do you do these things so that they are a good use of your time. Because this is not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. I'm going to talk to you about what worked for me, just because I think it's helpful to hear how one person thought about how to go about it. But I am not saying that this is what you should do. Maybe you should have a blog, maybe you should not have a blog. It really has to come out of the kind of person you are, the kind of thing that you are going to be able to be doing consistently, and the kind of projects that you're working on. But I do think that there's value there for everybody. So the reason that I started my blog was not because I was strategic at all. I did not want to write a blog, and my reasons were different. I didn't want to write a blog because I never read blogs. I never wrote short. I always wrote long. I never had 500-word ideas. I had 60,000-word ideas. I never came out of journalism, so the idea of writing every day was very did not appeal to me at all. I was very untechnically savvy, like I can barely use iTunes type of thing. And I really felt like I was a book person, and that's the kind of writing I like to do, and that was the kind of reading I like to do. I didn't like to read in the swarm. And I thought, if I don't enjoy consuming it, how can I enjoy producing it? But my agent had said to me at some point, you know, I think you should think about starting a blog. I think you would really like it, and I don't think it's that hard. So she had planted this seed in my head. And when I was working on the Happiness Project, the idea of the Happiness Project, if you don't know, is that I took a year and test drove the wisdom of the ages, the current scientific studies, and the lessons from popular culture about how to be happy. I wanted to see if you tried all those things, would they actually work? Well, one of the things that you read about in the science over and over again is that novelty and challenge bring happiness. And I did not think that would be true for me. I decided that I was one of those people who was made happy by familiarity and mastery. I like to do the same things every day and basically nothing else. So I didn't think this would be true for me. But because of the way my book was set up, I needed a way to test that proposition. So I thought, well, I'll start a blog. And I really started my blog with kind of the same attitude as I tried laughter yoga and a gratitude journal and hypnosis. It was like, I'm going to try it and see if it works. But I loved having a blog. And happiness does not always make you feel happy. And my blog, even to this day, gives me tremendous feelings of insecurity and frustration, and feeling stupid, and worrying that I'm wasting my time, and feeling exposed, and feeling criticized. But it's a gigantic engine of happiness for me. So I started the blog, and I started getting it going, and I slowly began to engage more and more with the readership. And as I began to see the power of the blog, I began to think, maybe I should have a newsletter. Because what I was starting to get is I was starting to get a lot of emails from readers. And one of the things that's very clear is that anytime anybody is engaging with you, that is a very, very important piece of information. This is a person who likes your stuff. This is a person who's interested. They are so interested that they are reaching out to you. But what was I going to do with that information? What was I going to do with those emails? I didn't want to just keep them in a file for 2 years and then like send out a blast. So I wanted to do something that was going to be useful for them, but that was also going to help me stay engaged with them. So I decided to start a monthly newsletter. And so I sent out a monthly newsletter. It now goes to about 41 or 42,000 people. And if you email me, you go onto that email newsletter. Because by emailing me, you have tacitly, you know, that is the spam, whatever the spam requirement is, that's okay. And people can also just sign up. And I constantly am prompting people to sign up. And the newsletter is a way that once a month I don't write much original content for it because I wanted to keep it easy. One of the challenges of social media is how do you keep it manageable? You can't just be creating new content all the time. Like, so it's basically highlights from my blog. But what I learned from that is that people read in different ways. They come to your content in different ways, and I'm going to come back to that later. I also decided that I needed to be more present on Facebook. Facebook is just a gigantically powerful tool. Many, many people spend hours a day on Facebook. And in fact, just recently, I went to a big blogging conference and I decided to step up my Facebook game on my page. And I don't want to get into all the nitty-gritty, but just for your information, you can have a personal profile, which is like, that's me, Gretchen Rubin, and this is I'm married to Jamie Rubin, and that's like, that's me like that. But then you can also have a fan page, which is like if you're Dr. Oz or you're a band. But anybody can have a fan page. And a fan page gives you sort of different abilities from the personal profile. And I can get into why you would want to have a fan page. And I really tried to step up my Facebook fan page action. And to give you, well, okay, I'll get into that later. So that's Facebook. And another thing that has just burst onto the scene in the last couple years is Twitter. I just read a statistic that in 2007, there were 5,000 daily Twitter tweets. Now there are 50 million daily tweets, and it's just going off the charts. Twitter is enormously powerful. And if there's one thing that you come out of here thinking about, I would think about Twitter. It's very manageable in terms of the time that you spend on it, and it's very, very powerful way to connect with other people. A lot of people are not on Twitter, so it's a small universe, but it's a highly, highly engaged universe. One of the biggest drivers of traffic to my blog is from Twitter. Even though I don't even tweet that much, I aim to tweet 4 times a day. But most people are not on Twitter. I mean, most people are not on Twitter, and yet that's how engaged that audience is. So Twitter is a really, really important tool. But again, I want to say this is what worked for me. This is what is working for me. But I wouldn't say that everybody should use all these tools all the time. It really depends on you and the kind of writer that you are and the kind of engagement you want to have. But as you think about how you're going to put yourself out there, something to think about is really think about who you are and how you want to present yourself. When I started my blog, I spent a lot of time thinking about, like, well, what was I trying to do with my blog? So if you read my blog, this is what I try to do. I try to give good information. So I try to provide psychological terms or studies or resources or quotations. I try to be funny, which I'm not very funny, but I try to be funny. I try to show people what it's like to live in New York City, because I think people are always interested to hear about what it's like in someone's very specific experience. I never write about anything that I would not want my grandmother to read. I just decided I do not work blue. I don't use curse words. I don't write about any kind of... Everything I have is super, super safe for work. Anybody could read what I write. I also decided that I would never criticize anyone but myself. It's very tempting online to be snarky. It just, like, drags you there. And I just decided that I wasn't going to do that. And at first, people said to me, well, you know what? Your blog is really, really earnest. It's kind of preachy. And I was like, you know what? There it is. That's what I am. And a lot of smart people said, it's not going to work. The internet is it's an ironic place. It's a snarky place. There's no room for the kind of writing that you're doing. And I just decided, well, I can't be comfortable with any kind of writing. So I did that. One thing I would say to you is if you're thinking about starting a blog anonymously, it's almost impossible to stay anonymous if anybody wanted to find out who you were. And also, it's successful. You're going to want... to reveal yourself. So if you set it up so that you will really be in a pickle if you reveal your identity, it kind of takes the fun out of it. So I think the more authentic and the more comfortable you feel with what's up there, the better you're going to feel over the long term. Another thing that I thought about was I really wanted to shine a spotlight on other writers. I try to talk about other people's books a lot because I'm a writer and I wish people would do that for me. And so the karma police, I try to play my role by helping other people get a spotlight on their work. And I also do that through Twitter. Now, and as you're building a community, because one of the things you really want to do is you want to bring people in, you want to have them want to come back, you want them to feel like they're engaged with you in kind of in a deeper way. Here are some things to think about. people use the internet in very, very different ways. For example, I resisted doing video for years because I hate video. I would never choose to watch a video if I could read something. And I often will just not watch something because it's in video form, because it takes so long. I'm like, I could read that in a minute, but it would take me 10 minutes to watch that in a video, so I would just never do it. The fact is, tons and tons and tons of people love video. So if I want to reach those people, I will reach them much more effectively using video. Now, I'm not saying everybody should use video, but I'm just saying it was short-sighted of me to think that because that's the way I use the internet, that that was the way other people use the internet. Similarly with email newsletters. Many smart people say, everybody's got so much email, nobody wants another email in their inbox, nobody reads email newsletters. But I believe that of all the things, the questions that I asked you, that was the one where most people raised their hand. Many, many people read email newsletters. A newsletter is a great way to reach people, and they sign up themselves and they can unsubscribe at any time. So it's a great tool. And the more places that you go, the more people that you're going to engage with, just because they're all coming in a different way. If there's somebody whose homepage is Facebook, the person is going to be much more likely to come engage with you through Facebook than they're going to engage with you through Twitter, because maybe they don't even use Twitter. So one of the things is to think about, well, if you truly want to go to reach a large number of people, you have to be present in a large number of places. There is an advantage to having a blog because all these things can point back to the blog. In the end, I always am trying to drive people to my blog because that's where I can create a universe for them to inhabit. Or maybe I should have clicked through to all my things as I was talking about it. I forgot that I have this powerful new thing. Okay, so here is my Facebook page. And I'm actually redesigning it so that it looks much prettier. But this is it, so you can do it. And then, so I started doing this thing on, happiness question, this is my new thing, is I ask questions on my Facebook page. 283 people answered happiness is a choice, agree or disagree. It's a very, very high level of engagement. When I asked the question, what is your favorite TV show? I had 75 comments in 6 minutes. And so this is really something that I'm trying to do now because I'm really trying to increase my engagement on the Facebook page. Another thing is if you're going to try to create a community, you really need to be very present in the community. And one thing that I've changed in the last year is I used to monitor my comments. I would always read my comments and sometimes I would answer my comment. And I would always answer a comment on the blog if someone asked me a direct question. But I didn't think it was my duty to answer that much. But what I realized is that really, if you have a strong feeling, it's important for the person who's writing the blog to be present in the comments. And so now I make a big effort to really engage with the comments much more. I engage with Facebook much more. I'm trying to figure that out on Twitter. It's tricky for kind of audience reasons on Twitter to know how much to respond. But you need to think about how you're going to stay present there. And another thing is to be a resource. Again, it's back to this idea of not wanting to be so much self-promotion. You want to be a resource. Don't talk about your things, but talk about other things that your audience would be interested in. If you're a fiction writer and they love your fiction, well, what are your favorite books? That kind of thing. Or just so that people look to you as a way to get good information. And another thing to think about as you think about building a community is there's really two communities. I have the community of my audience, which is the regular readers who read me, and then I have the community, which is the other bloggers who are interacting with me. And that's very, very important because the internet is a very helpful place, and people will help you if they know you. And so I have gotten to know a lot of people who write on related subjects, and I write about their books, they write about my books, we help each other, we give each other advice. It's a very warm and reciprocal place. But so you should be thinking about that's a community that you want to enter too. If you write historical fiction, who are the super fans of historical fiction? Who are the other writers of historical fiction? Who are the influential publishers and agents of historical fiction? Those are the people. And then the people who just love historical fiction. So those are two different communities. And another thing is consistency. This is really tough. But when you're starting these things, you have to think about what can you keep up with? Because to do something like once every 2 weeks isn't going to do anything. Like, save your energy and your time. Decide what you're going to do and figure out, like, what are you going to do to stick to it. When I started my blog, somebody said, you should blog every day. I had thought that I would blog, like, 3 times a week. He said, nope, if you want to have a real blog, you have to blog every day. So I've been blogging 6 days a week for 4 years. And for the kind of blog that I have, that's important. I don't think every single blog needs to have 6 entries a week, but have a theory and stick to it. Because if people come to your blog and they only see something like, you know, very scattershot, Twitter, you tweet once a month. I mean, these things, it's just not going to make a difference. So don't burden yourself with a sense of failure. You know, just say, like, it's not working for me, I'm not going to do it. Or I'll do it when it's right. But the thing is to figure out a way that it makes sense for you and that it works for you. So now I'm going to talk about my mantras, and then let's open it up for questions, because it'll be much more interesting to hear what you guys are thinking about. The first one, and somebody told me this right away, it was hugely influential to me. Ubiquity is the new exclusivity. It used to be that what you wanted was to have an exclusive excerpt run in the New York Times Magazine. That is not what you want now. Now you want everybody to see your stuff everywhere they go. You want them to see it in as many places as possible. So, for example, with my blog, I cross-post in any place that will take me, which means if I write a post here, twice a week it goes on to the Huffington Post, every single day it goes on psychologytoday.com, every single day it goes on Yahoo Shine, it goes on Divine Caroline twice a week, Savvy Source, anybody who will take me. I'm trying to get on BeliefNet right now. They're trying to figure out how to do it with RSS feeds because I want to reach readers and in as many places as possible. And so you just want people to bang into you whenever they can. So one thing a lot of people say to me is, well, I really don't want to put my material up there because I think people would steal my ideas. The fact is, this just doesn't really seem to happen. First of all, your idea is probably not as new as you think. But also, you have a unique perspective and a unique voice, and no one is going to shape it the way that you do. But the most important thing to think about is that if there is a risk that people would steal your stuff, it is far outweighed by the benefit of people even knowing about your stuff. For example, I have a friend who's writing an excellent book about parentless parents. And she said to me, well, I'm worried about putting my stuff on the Huffington Post. And I said, the thing is, there's a small number of people who would be interested in reading a book about parentless parents. Those people, however, would probably be very, very interested in reading a book about parentless parents because that's the situation that they're in. But probably they will never even know that your book exists. How are they? They just happen to be walking by the right place at the bookstore when it's right there. They're going to read about it in, like, the 2 magazines that write something about it. I mean, it's so easy just to not even know that a book exists. And some books, you don't even know that there's a category of books like that. I mean, sure, you're like, well, I'm pregnant. I'll go get a book about being pregnant. You know that that book exists, but you might not even think of yourself as being in the category of a parentless parent. So you would never even look for a book about parentless parents. And so I think the advantage of people being drawn to you and interested in you and wanting to know more and wanting to read your stuff is much greater when they just get the exposure. And so that's why I think ubiquity is the new exclusivity. Arianna Huffington said this, and this is incredibly important. Self-expression is the new entertainment. Never a truer word was spoke. Self-expression is the new entertainment. And this is what you're seeing on my Facebook page. People want to express themselves. They want to give their answer. Does the arrival of spring make you happier? 64% of Americans say yes, 9% say no. 160 people wanted to weigh in on that. People want to express themselves. This is so if you provide a forum in which people are engaged and interested and have something interesting to say, that's going to be very powerful. Seth Godin, who's a very, very influential marketer, said about publishing, power will accrue to authors with direct connections to their readers. And this is why something like an email list is very important, because you want to directly connect to your readers. The world where the publisher handled all of this, or where all the outreach was done through mainstream media, is in the decline. This is what I would say about the role of publishers. Publishers are excellent at serving interest. They cannot generate interest. If the New York Times Magazine says, we would love to run for Serial, you know, I mean, they can say, do you want this? And then they can give it. You know, but they can't make somebody want it. So, for example, on my blog, you see that I have all these samples. Hang on. Turns out people really love to sample. Okay, you can buy the book, you can read sample chapters, you can watch a book video, you can listen to the audiobook sample. And I've heard from many, many readers that they're like, oh yeah, I looked at this, I listened to this before I bought. They can create these things for me. I could not create these. My publisher created these things, but they can't make anybody know about it. They can't make anybody go to it. They can't make anybody care. So they can serve an interest, but they cannot generate interest. So the more directly that you can engage with people who are interested in your subject and who are interested in your work, the better off you're going to be. And, you know, I have a friend who's a really great novelist, and I was trying to convince him to have a newsletter, and he was like, look, it's just too self-promote-y. I can't do that. I feel like such a cheeseball. Like, that's not the kind of writer I am. It's not the kind of guy that I am. And I was like, you're an amazing novelist. These are people who are writing you because they love your book so much. It's not like you're annoying them if you send them an email saying, hey, the second book is coming out. It's like they want to know that. And most people are flattered that an author would write to them. Now, you don't want to be sending them something every 2 days. You don't want, if it's just going to be like, hey, this is some news about me, you have to be very chary about how much you do that. But it's not a disservice to people. And so again, it's about thinking about, well, what can you do that's right for you and for your project? Another thing that is that's very comforting if you're starting to do this stuff is to remember this. And this is from William Aruda, who is a personal branding specialist. A strong voice repels as well as attracts. If you are out there with your stuff, you will be criticized and people will be mean to you. And it's upsetting. Some people shut off the comments to their blogs because they just can't take it. I do not read any reviews of my work. Unless I absolutely have to. Because I realize even if it's 90% nice, if there's one thing in there that is mean, it will upset me deeply for a day, and it will affect my work because it makes me very defensive. So I just can't go there. But I do remind myself that you can't write something that's going to appeal to everybody. And the more you try to do that, the more watered down it's going to be. So a strong voice repels as well as attracts. If some people love it, some people are probably going to hate it. You just have to deal with that. And one of the things that's difficult for writers, I think, is that you do feel so much more in contact with your audience. And I have a novelist friend who said, holy cow, you know, I'm reading all this stuff that bloggers are writing about my novel, and it's exciting that all these people are writing about it, but it's sort of upsetting, too. It's like, well, there it is. I mean, like, I choose not to read it. She wanted to read it. But it's just part of this social media is that you're out there with your stuff and people are going to be responding to it. And then the final point, and then we'll open it up for questions, is on the internet, your competitors are your allies. So a friend of mine said, who's writing a book which I cannot wait to come out, there's such a need for a book about introversion. So she's writing a book about introversion, and she said, well, I'm thinking about starting a blog, but I'm really worried because there are these couple other blogs that are about introverts and introversion, and I'm going to have to really distinguish myself from them. And she was talking about them clearly, like, very anxious about them. And I was like, these people are your new best friends. You should interview them. You should link to them. You should email them directly and tell them how much you love their stuff. You should say, let's get together for coffee the next time you're in New York City. These people are your friends. Because what you're trying to do, like, for people who are interested in what you're interested in, like, that's your set, that's your niche, that's your place, your space on the internet. And so make friends, not enemies, and think of those people as people that you're going to have a great relationship with and draw from. The pie can get bigger and bigger. I was completely distressed when I read in the New York Times Style section a big story about someone named Robin Okrent, who was writing a book called Living Oprah, one woman's story of how she spent a year following all the advice from Oprah. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's been on the Today Show. She's in the New York Times style section. Yes, my book is different from hers, but it's awfully a lot the same. She's got a blog. She's got a book deal. This is a disaster. And then I realized, no. This is the Happiness Project. She's my friend. I love it. And I emailed her, Robin, I was so cool to see what you're doing. That's so awesome. And how amazing that you got a New York Times style section story. I am so happy for you. And the thing is, when you pretend it, you will feel it. That's a Happiness Project principle. Make it, you know, act the way you want to feel. And when I reached out to her and acted friendly, I did feel more friendly. And she was like, oh my gosh, Gretchen, I'm totally freaked out by you. My friends keep emailing me the link to your blog. So we became friends instead of being enemies. She came here for BEA. We had coffee. It was good. And instead of feeling like there was somebody out there who was a threat and who was stealing something from me, I felt like I had an ally. And so, you know, and in fact, you know, we were like joking about like, oh, we should start a union for people who have year of books. And then I introduced her to AJ Jacobs, who was like her huge, like this person she idolized. So the internet is so big. There is room for everybody. And we can get, and by helping each other, we can make it get bigger and bigger. And so you don't have to feel feel squashed by what's out there already, but just enter into it with an open heart. And I really think that you'll get a lot out of it. I mean, and so my last point is just, how much do I feel that my work in social media affected the sales of my book? And the thing is, I think it played an extremely important. I don't think it was wholly accounted for the success of the book. But it was very important, especially at the beginning, because I could say to people, hey, my book is coming out. I hope you're interested. You know, it helped people know about it, to be waiting for it, to recognize it when they heard about it. When somebody was like, well, what is this thing? There's all this stuff there to like get them interested. And so I think it's a super, super powerful tool for writers at a time when the mainstream media and publishers are really backing away from this. So the question is, can somebody else do this for you? No. You really have to do it for yourself. And the question is, can I start it 6 months before my book comes out? And the answer is, no. You should start today. All this stuff builds. I have been blogging for 4 years, and so I've been blogging for 3.5 years before my book came out. And you just need that time to build that big, big base. So now I want to open it up to your questions. Yes?
If you look at your bestseller list, what proportion of bestsellers are, you know, are blogged and tweeted? And
yes.
Is there a direct correlation between what's on the bestseller list and blogging and tweeting?
It depends on what you look at. So, for example, there's a book called Pioneer Woman Cookbook. And this book, I don't think anybody expected much of it. And it was a gigantic, gigantic, gigantic bestseller, simply because the woman is such a beloved blogger. A lot of the books on the bestseller list are, you know, they're all kind of exceptional. So, like, Game Change, that's that. And then a lot of them are there because they're like Chelsea Handler, and she's a celebrity. So I don't think it's enough to say that it's going to get you there, but I think that more and more we're seeing, like, okay, for example, Dan Pink wrote a book called Drive, and I think for sure social media made that book sell much better. Now, it hit the list a couple times. It was on the extended list many, many more times, and I think a lot of that was because he's very active on social media. Another thing is like, if you ever do events, social media is really great because you can reach people to get them to come to events. Because so often, you know, when you do book events, nobody comes, which is an ineffective use of time and also tremendously humiliating. So this is a way to make people come to events and that sort of thing. So I don't think it's, I think that we haven't really seen it quite in operation yet. I think the next year or two we'll see a very big difference. Yeah.
Deal with if a weirdo has to log on, and also the thought of
But, well, that, it's like, why is that different from having it in the newspaper? Even then, yeah. Well, this is one thing about social media. People definitely have different levels of concern about privacy. I myself am unconcerned with privacy. It's not something that bothers me. That said, like, I have no pictures of my children on my Facebook page. For some reason, that's something that I feel squeamish about. For someone who has concerns, you should really, really think about that and how you can work within that. So maybe you feel comfortable with Twitter, because it's just a different kind, it's sort of like less personal. And so you feel like you can be on Twitter even though you wouldn't want to have a Facebook fan page. Or those are different lines. I will say this, I've never had anybody. I have people writing me literally from my address because they want to send me presents. And at first I was like, that's weird giving out my address. And like, how do I know they're going to really send me like a bluebird made out of, sea pebbles. But they do. Everybody's been really, really nice. Now, I'm an extremely nice, here we go. Getting ready to go to New York Society Library. I love New York. So this is my Twitter feed. So you can see that Twitter is much less personal. You know, you don't feel as identified personally as you would on something like a Facebook page where kind of a whole universe opens up around you. A lot of these things, you can really control it, but the fact is you are putting yourself out there. And that does bring an opportunity for people to be ugly. My experience has not, I haven't had trouble with that, but I see that. Yes?
When you talk about developing an email list.
Yes.
I don't understand how you quite do that. Let's say, for example, I'm going to dream up an example.
Okay.
You were writing a book on Eastern food.
Yeah.
How would you know, and I'm not, but how would you know who's out there that would be interested in strangers that you know?
Yes. Excellent question.
How do you know who's out there who would be interested in knowing about Eastern food?
Yes. Okay. So if you have a blog about this is one of the reasons why a blog helps. So here you can sign up to my monthly newsletter right there. And I will constantly remind people that I have a newsletter, so I try to get them to sign themselves up. Again, if anybody emails you, like, oh, I read your column in the New York Post about Mideastern food, like, I loved it, I would add them to my newsletter. And also, this is where Twitter is really great. Now, Twitter has groups on it, all these interest groups. And believe me, the foodie group is insane. You go into the foodie people, and those people, they got the organic foodie people, and they got the French foodie people, and they got the buy local foodie people, and they got it's got the every kind of foodie people that you want. So you get into Twitter, and you start getting in with those people, and slowly but surely, you'll get a sense of, maybe you don't want to have a blog, but maybe there's a very influential blog, and you could write to the person and say, I love your stuff. Would you consider doing an interview with me? And in that, you could say something like, and I'm starting a newsletter. Would you like to sign up? You got to kind of get into the game and get a feel for what's going on there, but there is so much happening that once you reach out to see what's going on and whatever is interesting to you. Now, all these things are pillars that support one roof. And the more pillars that you have, the more solid the structure is going to be, and the more you're going to be able to point things back and forth. My newsletter subscription rate has shot up as my readership has shot up, and my profile has shot up. When it started, it was very small. But even 500 people is a lot. So that's how I would start to think about it. Yes?
How many hours each day do you network?
You know, that's a really good question. My blog posts, that's a writing and thinking challenge. And so some days I spend a lot of time on it, and sometimes I spend very little time on it. Like once a week I do a quotation, and I have gigantic piles of quotations, so that takes very little time. And some days it takes a lot of writing. Now, the way I set up my blog is it's very much the kind of work that I do, so I don't feel like it's a waste of time because I'm thinking about and writing about things that I could probably use, like, for years a lot of it went into my book. But things like answering email, putting up tweets, putting questions up on Facebook page, it starts to take a lot of time. And I think whatever kind of work people are in, a huge happiness challenge is how do you escape from the cubicle in your pocket and this feeling that you just have to constantly be keeping up with everything. So I would say I spend at least a couple of hours a day on it. but I feel like it's extremely useful. But here's an example of how all this stuff can help you also with your book, because you have a direct connection to your audience. When I wrote my book, it occurred to me, like, oh, it would be so great if book groups would read my book. And it seems like the kind of book groups would kind of like. But I didn't really have high hopes for book groups at this point, because most book groups have policies against buying hardbacks because of the expense. And most book groups don't read nonfiction. They only read fiction. And also, most book groups don't read books right after they come out. They usually wait a while. I don't know why. That just seems to be my sense. But months before the book came out, I had created this thing. I think we had created it thinking that it would be something to give to indie booksellers, which was like a one-page discussion guide for book groups, with the thought that they would be able to like have that available or something. But I started noticing that people were emailing me saying, hey, my book group is reading your book. And I was like, well, that's kind of, I'm kind of surprised. And after I'd gotten 10 or 12 of these, I thought, okay, fine. So I put a thing on my blog. Are you in a book group and you want to, and you're thinking about reading The Happiness Project? If you want one, email me and I'll send you my one-page discussion guide. Note, I do not make it available on my blog for downloading because I want you to have to email me. Why do I want you to have to email me? Because I want your email address. Right? You want something from me? I'm going to get your email address. If you want to unsubscribe, you can do that at any time. But I have one shot to get your email address, and I'm going to take that shot. And so they email me, and like 350 to 400 people have asked for this, which is great because a book group is not one person reading your book, but several people reading your book. It's fantastic. But the only reason, this isn't something a publisher could have done for me, because they would have had no way of knowing that. And if I weren't reading my own emails and I wasn't in constant conversation with them, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But the publisher did make it into this pretty thing that, like, you know, has elements of the jacket and is very polished looking, where when I did it, it was just a Word document. So they were, when I said to them, would you help me do this? They said, 100%, we'll do that. They turned it around in a day. But they couldn't make anybody want it. They couldn't make anybody ask for it. So anyway, it is a lot of time, but it's very useful. Yes? Yeah? Yeah?
With the technical aspects, yes, of the blogs, do you use the blog? Do you build it all yourself? Do you just know WordPress or Typepad, or do you have someone that helps you?
Okay. I started my blog on Typepad, but if you're starting a blog, I would say use WordPress. And I can tell you why, but just take my word for it. Use WordPress. So I use WordPress, and for the first 3 years, I did it all myself. I use Typepad.
What's it called again?
I would use WordPress.
WordPress.
WordPress. That is, it is the premier blogging platform. You have to pay for it, but you get what you pay for. It's the easiest. It's the most bells and whistles. I would do that. I have Typepad too, and I love Typepad. But I'm just saying. No. I did it all myself for 3 years, and then I realized that it was just looking a little bit too loving hands at home, and I didn't know how to like step it up. And one of the Happiness Project a Zen saying that is very true is when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And somebody crossed my path who was like, yeah, I had that thing with my blog too. Like, I've been doing it for myself for a really long time. And then I got this guy who was really good, and he just like cleaned it up for me. I was like, okay, what's his name? I'm going to hire that guy. And so I hired that guy. And, you know, he made these buttons. And he put that number one on the cover. Like, he made it more designy. But I will say this. I did it myself for 3 years. It was perfectly successful. I think the way, and I know people who have blogs that look terrible, but their content is so good, it doesn't really matter. If you're starting a blog, don't get hung up on the bells and the whistles and having everything perfect. Just get it going. And you can always fix it later or find somebody to fix it later. But basically, and I think there's a real advantage to being able to do everything yourself, because that way you can just do it. There's not like a whole intermediary. You want to just be able to dive in there and just post something if you want to. Yes?
How have you used video and humor?
Video and humor?
Not necessarily together. You mentioned humor.
Yes.
And you mentioned video.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting how you've used that.
Okay, so video, this was a place where my publisher really helped. They were like, video. And they really wanted me to do this Year of Happiness challenge thing, which I thought was a little hokey, but I was like, well, maybe they're right and I'm wrong. So what I do is it'll be posted up later today. Every week I do a video of a Happiness Project resolution, And you just can watch me talk for like 1 or 2 minutes about sitting in my library. Here I am. Weekly video. And so it's like 2 minutes long and I talk. Now, I also have used a flip camera. And that is super easy to use. And that's just like, it's $100 and you just go and film and put it up on your blog. And I think I could have just done it that way. This, for the way this was going to be, because I wanted it on YouTube and blah, blah, blah. It was easier for me to do this way, but I've used the flip camera and that's perfectly fine. And one thing about the internet that somebody told me that was very comforting is the internet people accept really, really low production value. Like, don't worry if you don't look good or don't worry if you didn't get a good shot. People just accept that. And so just get it up. If you think it's something good, just get it up there. Humor, I just think any kind of writing is more engaging if it's funny. I myself am not a very funny writer, but I try to be funny. Whenever I can, like I always look back and I'm like, do I have an opportunity to be funny here? Kind of. I mean, one thing about Twitter, you've got 140 characters, and the people who can manage to be hilariously funny in Twitter, it's really masterful. I really give credit to those folks. But I don't try to be funny on Twitter. I'm not that funny. Yes.
Yeah. I understand that after laying the ground, your book is obviously better for this.
Yes.
And your next one probably will too. So what's next?
I'm going to do another book about happiness. I'm trying to figure that out right now, exactly what that's going to be. But this is the big question about everything online, and it's not just like for us. It's like, you know, Condé Nast is staying up late thinking about this too, which is like, how the heck do you make money out of it? Because what it turns out is like people like to create this stuff. Like I like doing my blog and people like reading it, but where do you get the money? Where is the money in between? Now, for me, it all worked out fine because my book did very well, so it's all paid off. But that might not have happened. I really do believe that the opportunities that come to you, the kind of things that you can do will be enhanced by being present online in this way. Is there a direct monetization plan? No. I mean, the people who talk about free all the time, and I'm very, very influenced by that, and I really, really believe a lot of this argument about why you should give things away for free in order to get people to buy things. For writers, there are a lot of times they're like, there's speaker fees. Okay, this is not going to work for most people, and also there's been a huge decline in that because of the economy, so speaking fees is not the answer. Some people's work lends itself to things like teleseminars, but other people's work does not lend itself to things like teleseminars. So part of it, I think you have to do for the engagement of it, and not necessarily think that it isn't necessarily going to translate into money. It's kind of the thing where I think you sort of can't afford not to do it. I think what's going to start happening too is I think that agents and publishers are going to start being much, much more inquisitive about your online presence. When I sold my proposal, I had started the blog at that point, and they were like, "Oh, that's cool. You know, that's cool, you've got a blog." They did not care at all what the traffic was. I mean, they didn't care. They knew nothing. And they've learned a lot just in those 3 years. So I think part of it is like just being able to say, I've got a big following on this, or like I've got all these people engaged with me like this. It's a selling point. Yes?
Your blog is extremely focused, which is very important in a blog, correct? I mean, the happiness part, there it is.
Yes. Yeah, the banner.
The banner. Is that also very important to how to bring people in?
Yes.
That whole description. What if you're a novelist who's written?
Right. Yeah. It's a very good point. Yes. I think that that's a very good point about, this is called the banner, the thing across the top, and I think you really do a disservice to your blog if you don't say very clearly up front, what is this blog? Why am I here? I was looking at a blog this morning. It was about organ donation, which is something I'm very interested in, but I'm like, I don't understand. Like, is this about trying to get people to be living donors, or is this about, like, these three sisters and their personal story? Like, I couldn't get oriented to the site, and so I sort of lost interest in it. So you want to make it very clear what it is. Now, novelists have a very different kind of challenge than nonfiction writers. Some fiction writers make it about process, and they write about the writing process. And that can work if that's something that's interesting to you. Some writers aren't that interested in talking about it. They just like want to be writing a novel. They don't want to be like talking about writing a novel all day. one thing you, so in that case, a blog might not be the best thing for you, or like not a daily blog. Maybe once a week you would want to do something like what I'm reading now, or you could have like my favorite passage and to write a little bit something about it. A blog can do many things. What I want my blog to do is I want people to hear about my blog and come to my blog and get interested in the idea of having a happiness project and do it themselves and read my book and read my blog and change their lives. So that's what I want. But what you might want to do is say, if somebody hears about me on NPR, I want them to go and they look me up. I want them to have a sense of who I am and what I love and the kind of writing that I do. So, for example, this actually happened to me. I'm a huge fan of Twilight. There it is. I'm cool with that. And so a friend of mine said, and this is like something that would not have happened a year ago. Think about how this is so new. Hey, Gretchen, I know you're a huge fan of Twilight and you just went to New Moon. I wanted to make sure you saw this awesome review from The All, which was a website that I'd never heard of, AWL All. So she sends me a link, and this thing is like the craziest piece of writing I have ever seen in my life. It's these two women, and they're moving in between feminist criticism, Valley Girl talk, ghetto talk, and like, you know, historical literary, you know, classic literary criticism. I mean, they had really interesting things to say, and it was a tour de force of writing and of imagination. I was totally blown away. I'm like, who are these two writers? So one of them, Natasha Vargas Cooper. Who is she? I look her up. Here's her Tumblr account. A Tumblr is like kind of a quasi-blog. I read Tumblr. I see who she is. I'm going to follow her on Twitter. I follow her on Twitter. What's she writing about? Blah, 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 blah. Then she has like an About Me page. I'm reading it. Like, oh, she writes this, she writes this, she writes this. And by the time I'm done, which took about 5 minutes, I'm like, I love Natasha Vargas Cooper. I wrote her a piece of fan mail, and I had committed in my mind to buying her book about Mad Men, which is coming out in July for my friend who's a huge Mad Men fan. Because she left a trail for me. I could engage with her and get more and more interested in her and say, this is what I love. So, for a novelist, maybe you don't want to blog in this classic way, but you want to create a world that people are like, if they come to you, they are like, wow, this is, we have all the same books that we love. Or, you know, I had no idea she wrote da-da-da-da-da. You know, you want to create something that, so when people look for you, they find you, and they find you in the way that you want them to find you. Because, you know, there's just like this weird stuff that's out there. And you...
I have a Facebook page. Yeah. A Facebook fan page.
Yes.
A link to Goodreads.
Yes.
So
yes.
World
yes.
There. I don't yet have a blog, but... So that's, that is a world.
Okay, so I would say... Do you ha- and you don't have an author site?
Yes.
You do?
A big,
you have a big author site.
And
so
I have a guest book, and I have...
Then maybe you have enough. Maybe you should go on Twitter to just, like, have that kind of thing, because that's very easy. And it's easy to find people who are interested in the kind of fiction that you're writing and that you're reading. And but a blog probably wouldn't make sense for you because you don't have anything to say really. You're like, read my book. Yeah, read my book. Yeah. So again, I think this is a perfect example. Like, really think about, well, can people find me if they're looking for me? Is there enough? But like your Facebook page, like, are you updating it from time to time so it feels alive and people feel like they're really getting a sense of you? Oh, I don't know. That's interesting.
Yes,
I didn't try that.
That's a very interesting point. And so somebody who has a breakdancing thing, right?
Yeah.
I have a friend of mine who has a personal page, but his breakdancing page is about breakdancing. Mine is Elizabeth Winthrop personal page and Elizabeth Winthrop fan page. But if you search for Elizabeth Winthrop, you'll always end up on my personal page when I really want you on my fan page.
Wait, are you sure that you have a page or do you have a group? You have a fan page?
And I updated a lot about writing.
But see, this is a technical question because one of the arguments for having a fan page is that it's indexed by Google. So it's surprising that your profile page would come up before your fan page.
But apparently Facebook won't allow you to have a fan page with the same name or any fan page without a personal page. But writers have the same name. You see, it's not like Christopher Tan is over here and his breakdancing page is just breakdancing. So you Google breakdancing.
No, no, that's very interesting because I'm surprised by that because of the way that Google indexes it. So that's very surprising. I don't know, you might ask... You know what you might do is email somebody like Mashable or TechCrunch and say, like, challenge question, guys. But see, this is if you're on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, you're like, hey, why is my favorite coming up instead of my page? And, like, somebody will email you back, like, hey, it's I swear, Twitter is an amazing resource. You're like, I don't know what kind of camera to get. Or, like, I was like, I want iMovie, but I don't have a Mac. What's the same thing for the PC? And everybody emailed me the answer. It's just, like, it's fantastic. But it's because that's, like, there's definitely an answer to that question. Yes? Oh.
Question.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah. I'm left-handed, so I...
My husband and I write together, and we wrote a book on,
here's the Facebook
page. Middle Eastern history, a very contentious subject. Lots of hate mail if you're not careful. So we did a website where you really can send us email, but you don't ever see our email address.
Yeah.
So that's people concerned about not wanting to get lots of hate mail or unwelcome spam or whatever. You can do this on your website. In other words, it's disguised. We get the they send, but unless we want to email them back.
Yeah, it says like info@NewYorkSocietyLibrary.com.
So I'd be interested in knowing why, if you already have a web page, you would want also to have Facebook. The other thing is, to answer the woman in the front, there is a very amusing book promotion on YouTube by a woman that wrote Dreaming in Hindi. I know her. Whatever, it's
Kathy
wonderful.
Rich.
And what she's done is a very self-deprecating promo for the book about learning Hindi. And she interviews her local newspaper guy, and he says, you know, you can't learn Hindi in Jaipur. They don't speak Hindi in Jaipur. They speak X, Y, and Z. And then she goes to the cab driver in New York, who she does engage with Hindi. And then, you know, her local Indian restaurant where she gets a free lassi. So she does this little adventure. You can, you know, her name is
Catherine Russell Rich.
Dreaming in Hindi, and you'll get it on YouTube if you really want to see how to do a video on YouTube that will promote your book without looking, making you look like a self-promoting fool.
Right.
That's really a good example.
Yeah, no, that is great. I know exactly the one you're talking about. Yes. Okay, that's a very good question. A website is, usually when people talk about a blog, they mean by that something that's updated regularly. So, like, I have a author website. And it's static. It doesn't change unless I call the designer and have a whole big process thing about how it's going to change. And this is my author site. So it doesn't get updated. It doesn't have any kind of current information. It doesn't have any... this is really a resource that people are like, who the heck is Gretchen Rubin anyway? And it has a lot of all my books sort of equally represented, where the Happiness Project is all about the Happiness Project. But usually with a blog, people mean something that's moving, that's changing over time.
So does nobody go to your website anymore?
Well, I think that they do, but I don't know if they do because I have no way of interacting with them. I mean, unless they email me. But this is really a classic author website.
Doesn't this take you to your blog?
It does if you click up here. That will take me to the blog. But this is a whole separate site. This is the Gretchen Rubin site. So it's for all my blogs. It's like for my whole writing career. So every time I write a book, I add it and I highlight my new book. The way to see it has, I have a vertical just for the Happiness Project up there.
This is the website.
Yeah. The thing about if you don't have an author website yet, you want to do it on the cheap and make it easy on yourself, you can use a blog platform to create an author website for yourself, and that lets you do two things. It means that you can update it whenever you want without having to go through somebody else, and it also means you don't have to pay a web designer. You're just paying to use the blogging thing. And then you can update it if you want, and you can take the dates off of it so that people can't see the last time that you posted. So blogging can, and there's actually, if you look online, there's information, like tips for how to use a blogging like something like WordPress or Typepad to create an author website, because I do think it's a cheaper, easier way to create an author website. Now, I already had an author website that's been, this has been up for like 5 years, so I just updated it rather than take it down and deal with trying to make my blog more up to date. But if you want something that's going to be updated, that's going to feel fresh, where your voice can, you can react to things, then you, then that's where a blog would come in. Yes. Yeah. Like if you search for Gretchen Raven, I don't know. I'd be curious what comes up first. Probably something I would not want to see. Right? Never Google yourself. Okay. So my website does come up first. Probably because that's what the title is. And then the Happiness Project is third. See? And then there's about me. Oh, there's a picture of my daughter. You just have to be prepared to be, huh? Oh, that was from the New York Public Library. Must have put that on their site and tagged it, and so it appears in Google Images. This is the thing. I'm comfortable with that. It doesn't bother me. But if you're weird about privacy, the internet is not your friend. Yes. Yes.
Where do you go to get somebody to hold your hand at the beginning?
Yes. One of the things was when I was actually writing the book, like Twitter had not even been invented yet. You know, like a lot of these things weren't issues. For me, the challenge is going to be what's going to happen now when I start writing again, because I'm going to need to carve out so much more time. So I think I'm going to have to figure that out. I'm sort of dreading trying to come to that, you know, time limitation. But actually writing the blog post, I always feel like it's time well spent, because it's like, it's writing, it's good to write it. It's actually, as a writer, it's great discipline to actually be writing something every day. So it's gonna be tricky to make enough time for all these things. I do know there are starting to be consultants who can, like I know this guy Joe Dolce, D-O-L-C-E, like they have a thing where they can help get you up to speed. Like if you want to like help have somebody like set you up and get you going and kind of explain how it works, and also like for extra money, they'll sort of take a look at the kind of thing you do and say like, well, here are the other people in that space and kind of investigate it for you. Like they do that. They're like a PR firm. You know, they would help you. They're a publicity firm. So it's a kind, now it's sort of a subset of publicity. So there are people out there who can help you. And I'm sure that's like top of the line because they're like a real publicity firm, and there's probably like college students or whatever. It isn't hard, but you do sort of have to sit down and do it, and it can be very frustrating. So, you know, that's true.
The Authors Guild has a device called Site Builder.
Ah. Oh, it's somebody here has it. Okay.
Excellent. It's excellent. And you can either do it all online, or they run sessions down there. You can go down. I am not technologically savvy in any way whatsoever. And by the end of an hour and a half, they put together this thing to give you a little sheet. You follow directions.
Excellent.
And they did have one that you could do.
Many people are nodding around the room. So this is an Authors Guild?
Authors Guild. They also just had a promotion. I don't know if it's still on. Right. They will build a website for you for free.
Up right. Until March 31st.
Well, they extend it a little bit.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah.
Follow-up question. I have a first book coming out next year. At what point should you do this sort of thing?
Now.
Now I've got to write a book.
Yeah. What?
I've got to write the book.
Right, well, you got to do this at the same time. I mean, the thing about social media is, like, you can write a blog post and one person will read it. And then the next day, maybe two people will read it. So it just has to be out there for a really long time, because that's how the network effect works. The more stuff you have out there, then Google is going to find you through search engines. So people will come to you that way, just by natural search. or people will tell their friends about it and do it. Or like you're on Twitter. I mean, Twitter, you start with one, and then you slowly get more and more and more and more. And you just simply can't start a month before your book comes out and have any kind of presence that's going to make any difference. It's just because of the way, just because of the building blocks. I mean, and one mistake I see people making all the time is they're like, Gretchen, I love your blog, and I started a blog myself a month ago, and it would be so cool if you would link to it because I really want traffic. Okay, if you've been blogging for a month, I don't believe that you're really blogging. That's like anybody can do anything for a month. It's like, is that a real blog? It's like you gotta show that you're committed and have some weight there, and then you can. It just starts building and building and building. It's so tempting to think the book is the important thing. I've got to get the book done, and then I'll do this other stuff. You will really serve your book much better if you start this other stuff now and work on it alongside. And I totally understand the pain of giving up the time and the mental energy that it takes. But I really, if you want these tools to help you in that way, you have to give them time to build. It's not like an ad where like the ad runs that day, and it's got to be out there. Yes?
Earlier in your talk, you said if your blog is successful.
Yeah.
I just wondered what makes it successful? What is it that makes a blog successful?
Okay.
How do you quantify that? And the second question is, I'm having my website redesigned by the Authors Guild at the moment.
Oh, that's great.
And why wouldn't you put a blog on your website?
No, you could. No, a lot of people do that. They have an author website and they have a blog on that. That's great. That just didn't exist. Like, and I wasn't a blogger when I created my website. But many, many people do that. I think that's an excellent way to do it. Yes.
A lot of writer friends have a yes. blog on WordPress.
Yes.
And you can link.
Yes.
Obviously. Is there one advantage over the other?
I think it's how much do you want your blog to be a standalone thing. Like, I wanted my blog to be its own thing. But if your blog is really more about your identity, your total identity as a writer, I think that's great, too. I think both of those ways. What she's talking about is, like, you know when people, in the vertical, it would say, like, home, about the book, you know, my work, and then it would say blog. And then you just go to the blog if you want the blog. I think that works great. I think that works great, too. I think it's just whatever is easier and feels right to you. Now, what makes a blog successful is very hard to say. I mean, sure, if you get a lot of traffic, that's one measure. And another thing is the level of engagement. Like, I always look to see how many comments people have. Because
but you don't answer all of those
comments. I don't answer them all. But when I look at other people's blogs, I'm like, is this a vital blog? Is this an active blog? It's like, if it's like 7 comments, you're like, okay, people are reading this and commenting it. The conventional wisdom is that for every one person who comments, 100 people are lurkers. A lurker is somebody who reads but does not contribute. I myself am a lurker. I almost never will comment on somebody else's blog. But I read them, and I read the comments. I just don't write. So if you see 7 people commenting, that shows a really good audience. If you see 200 people, you're like, oh my gosh, this is generating a huge amount of interest. You know, so it's a way, so that's a way. And it's also measuring engagement. Like, how much do people care? How much do they want to pipe up? Because again, when you're, as a writer, what you want is for people to engage with you. And you want to be able to engage with them. And so that's one metric. One of the things, like, if you can get it out there onto other places, then, like, my traffic doesn't reflect, like, I was on Slate for a year, and people read me on Slate, but that doesn't affect the traffic to my blog, because they read me on Slate. But I don't care, because they're reading me on Slate, so it's great, you know.
When you were developing your voice for the blog, I mean, what were kind of, you know, what were some of the things you were thinking about?
Well,
because that's really important, is
right.
In order to get the people to engage.
Well, this is when I was thinking about, am I being funny, am I giving good information, am I being, you know, I'm only criticizing myself. That's when I was really thinking about the voice in that way.
Thank you.
Yes?
How do you do a newsletter? How do you set
it
up? How do you do Twitter?
Okay.
How do you do a video?
Okay.
How do you get pictures? There was a string of pictures there. I think somebody down here was asking. How do those pictures wind up there?
Okay. Well, that was just your Google search. That was just Google search. That's what those pictures were.
And Google search just put them on there?
If you look yourself up, I assure you there will be pictures up there of you. I won't do it to you now, but yeah, you should do it. Yes.
Okay.
We all have image banks of us now. And so there will be images of you.
All right.
Yes.
So Twitter,
okay.
Newsletter.
Okay.
Video. How do we do
okay.
This?
So I'm just going to tell you. I'm not going to explain. I'm just going to tell you what to do, and you just have to accept that I'm right. Okay. if you want to have a newsletter, do not do it out of your own email account. You need to use a email platform. I use MailChimp, which I love. MailChimp. MailChimp, like chimpanzee, which they kind of go nuts on the chimp.
M-A-I-L,
chimp. Most people use AWeber, AWEBER. I don't even, I just asked a smart friend, what do you use? He said, I use MailChimp. I was like, okay, fine. But most people use AWeber. So you could look at those two if you wanted to decide. Most people use AWeber. I love MailChimp. And you pay for that. But what it will do is it's a way to keep your email addresses. It will clean them up. Like if there's syntax errors, it will tell you. If there's duplicates, it will clean them out. If there's three bounce backs, it will take them out. If people unsubscribe, it will take them out. It makes you accountable for spam, which I think is a good thing. I want people to know that I am not a spammer. And one of the reasons that they know I'm not a spammer is I'm using MailChimp. Because MailChimp, AWeber, all these things are crazy, crazy about making sure that you are not spamming people. Because that's how they avoid getting caught in spam filters and how they don't get in trouble legally. And so it's a good thing to be using these. And then they let you format it, they let you make it pretty, and then it goes right into people's email. So I would do that. And again, it's just another thing to figure out. Slowly but surely, you can figure it out.
Is that one for the newsletter?
That's for the newsletter.
Okay.
That's the newsletter.
Okay.
Twitter. Twitter. Okay. Listen to me carefully because I'm going to make your life a lot easier. What you do is you go to Twitter, you sign up with your username and your password, and you immediately go to TweetDeck, TweetDeck. I don't know I can bring up my TweetDeck account here, so I'm not going to try. Tweet, TweetDeck, TweetDeck, DeckDeck. TweetDeck. TweetDeck. Yeah, you have to have a Twitter account, and then it will say like, oh, log in using your Twitter account, and you do it. It's just much, much, much easier to use Twitter through TweetDeck. There is a great site called twittips.com, TWITIPS.com, which tells you how to use Twitter. Twitter is not hard, but it's got to be explained to you. Have a friend explain. I had a friend just take 10 minutes, and I did this with a friend. Like, we were just in a coffee shop. I'm like, I can explain it to you. Just have somebody explain it to you. It's not hard, but it's much, much, much easier to use it through TweetDeck.
Find a 25-year-old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
we're also doing a library of technology workshop on this.
Yes. So
we're doing one on Twitter and Facebook.
When?
It will be in the start of May. It should be in the most recent newsletter, and it should be on our website.
Fantastic. That's what you need. That's perfect. That's great. Because it's not hard. It's just you just have to have somebody kind of explain it to you, and then you can do it much better.
All right. And video.
Don't worry about video. Worry about Twitter. Worry about Twitter. One thing at a time.
Okay.
One thing at a time. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I wrote about 10 years ago, and it was based on the experiences of my clients. So in a way, when I came to rewrite the book, I decided to use my blog to write the book. In other words, to float my ideas. Because my first book was based on feedback from my clients. So now the blog is proving to be very useful in giving me, it's actually writing the book for me. I mean, I did a first draft, and now I'm floating all those sections past people, and it's amazing the input you get.
Yeah.
And I canned my website. Because the website was a dead end for people. And people would do the Google search. They would end up with my website. It was all past historic stuff and ancient. And they'd never go the second step.
Right.
So I decided to get rid of it so that they wouldn't be detoured.
Right, right.
So I think people on the internet just will not go more than two steps.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah, I mean, this is this point about engagement that you're putting stuff out there, but people are reacting, and that's hugely powerful in knowing when you're hitting a chord how people are reacting to your ideas. So it's not like just a broadcast thing because you're actually hearing back from them. And I've had the same experience. Like, I'll post something that I think is not such a big idea, and I get such a huge reaction that I think, wow, there's something really bigger here than I realized. So it's hugely powerful in that way, and just like the exchange of ideas that can happen. Yeah.
I can understand the value of having a niche, and yours is great. But what do you do if tomorrow you wake up and want to write about healthcare?
Right, right.
Do you do it there? Do you?
Yeah, I'd have to. You know, I don't know. That's a very good question. I'm going to write about happiness, which I'm glad, because it's, I mean, I think every writer faces that to some degree, which is that are you recreating an audience? Or are you building off of an existing audience? I think that's always a question for writers, or for nonfiction writers, at least. I don't know. I would have to figure out how to try to get people. But, you know, that might just be that's not the natural audience. You know, this audience may not be a Gretchen Rubin audience. This audience may be a happiness audience, and they might not follow me. So I think it's a very good question, which I'm...
Follow-up question. Oh. Do you know of anybody who runs two or three blogs simultaneously because they have very different...
Yes. Yes, there's somebody named Darren Rouse, for example, who writes an incredibly successful, actually blogging, it's blogging tips. I used it all the time when I was starting, called problogger.com. And he's very influential. But then he also is a huge photographer, and he writes a very, very big photography site. I don't do photography, but my sense of it, it's like if you're a very proficient amateur photographer, it's like about lenses and filters and stuff like that. So he's got a whole separate identity as a camera person. And it was really that what started it. And then he started this blog for sort of as he was learning about blogging. The thing about it is, it's a time suck, you know. So people, once you start getting two or three out there, it's going to take a lot of time to do them well. You know, and sometimes I think, especially at the beginning, people are like, it's so cool, like, I love writing about my books, but then, you know, I like going to restaurants, and I just want to write restaurant reviews on my other site. And it's like, okay, well, think about, like, if that's really what you want to be doing with your time, or, you know, put it on Twitter, or whatever, because it's hard to do well, and it takes time. So it's just a question of how many balls are you trying to keep in the air? But there definitely are people who do that. Yes.
I just want to say about what you said about time. I wrote my first book, finished it in 2004, that before any of this. And I did everything myself. I did the marketing, everything. I had a book signing in Florida. Okay, I'm halfway through the second one, the sequel. And this is going to make everything so much easier.
Yes.
No matter if you spend an hour a day doing it. I did everything on the telephone.
Yeah. Yes.
Believe me, even if you do one thing, it's going to make everything so much easier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. It's like instead of comparing it to doing nothing, compare it to calling 150 newspaper things. Because also when your stuff is out there, like I got a lot of media hits before my book came out just as a happiness expert. Okay, here's the secret too. It's like, you're an expert if you say you're an expert. I'm like, why am I an expert, you know? It's like, anybody can be an expert. They're like, you've got a blog. So hire me. It gives you credit, you know, so you're out there ahead of time. And so... So if you're a novelist, you can be getting people to be interested in what's coming. And if you're a nonfiction writer, you can establish yourself as a credible source in the media. Like, you know, people would write, you know, because they would be just doing Google searches and they would kick up my blog and something I'd written. And then they would just want to quote me in the article, so they would call me. So that's great, you know, that's great. You can't get that. Just
about the Twitter handle.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I want to talk about that.
How important is it? When you're thinking about what to, you know, to call yourself, to link it to your books, to link it to your, you know,
this is a very important question. Okay, so don't freak out if you don't exactly understand what I'm talking about, but just try to follow along as best you can. When you go to Twitter, you will have a name, and every time you post something, it will have your name attached to it. And if somebody wants to retweet what you've said, which is to, like, put it out over to their own network, your name will appear there.
Is that the username?
Yeah, that's your username, your Twitter handle. Now, some people like to get really kooky with their Twitter username. Resist that temptation. When people are thinking to themselves, oh, I heard about Gretchen Rubin, I want to follow her on Twitter, and my Twitter name is like, you know, Skipping Road, they're not going to remember that. You know, and some people make them like combinations of letters and numbers. It's not memorable at all. It should, if it can be your name, make it your name. And if your name is Elizabeth Harper, but every single person calls you Beth Harper, make your Twitter handle Beth Harper. Make it the most obvious, logical representation of you that you can. Now, if you somehow want to identify professionally with an idea instead of your name, if you know that you're not going to wake up and want to write about healthcare, if you know that you have like one solid identity that is going to carry you forward, then you might want to make that your Twitter handle. But the default that people will always use is to assume that it is your name. If your name is taken, you're just going to have to think about some way to deal with that. It's a pain. But I love the film critic on Slate, Dana Stevens, and I'm constantly being like, what is her Twitter name again? The Highline. You know, because there's some obscure joke from the past that does. And it's like once you're following them and you're following them, maybe it doesn't matter as much, but I think it is good to have it be as obvious as it can be. This is not a place for you to hide your identity because everybody's going to be able to look at your profile. Like, if you don't want to be known as your identity, I guess then you could create a fictional identity and just use that or, you know, whatever. But you should really make that choice mindfully and not just do it kind of as a whimsical thing thinking that it doesn't really matter because it, in fact, does matter.
So sure is Gretchen Rubin.
My name is Gretchen Rubin.
If you have a really long name,
It does. Unfortunately, it does. And Twitter will only let you do. Like, I tried to get Happiness Project just to make sure that somebody else didn't take it, but I could only get Happiness Project because it cuts me off. You don't have as many number letters. So if you've got a really long name, you have to figure it out. But think about it. Think about it. Don't just automatically think like, oh, I want to be like Smiley Gal, you know? And then be like, and people are like, why are you Smiley Gal? You write like hard, wrenching fiction, you know?
I mean, if your real name has maybe 120 characters.
You can't do it. Twitter won't allow that. It only allows you a certain number of characters for your username. Yes?
Okay, my real name's Carol West, and I have a website, carolweston.com. A young person who I think was really... Mostly, I hope this was very good that she did this, but maybe I unknowingly let her create a couple monsters out there. My fan page is Writer Carol Weston, which means it starts with a W, not a C. And my Twitter, which I really...
Wait, and she created it for you as a fan?
Yeah, she helped me get it up and running.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's Writer Carol Weston, a few people have said, I looked for Carol Weston, but I couldn't find it because it's
Carol Weston.
And then
writer.
My Twitter is Carol Weston _ Weston, because somebody...
Yeah.
You're lucky your name is not a hard name, but not a common name.
Yeah.
So should I bother trying to change the, you know, yeah, as you said, make it Carol Weston Writer, or is it too late, or do you know?
Changing names of Facebook pages is tricky, and I don't know how that works. I don't know that you can just change it. If you can't just change it, you shouldn't, because you would lose those people that you already have. Yeah. So just suck it up. And the thing is, the same thing with Twitter. Unless you have like 4 Twitter followers, it probably is just what you have is what you have. This is why it's sort of nice to get it done the way you want it right up front, because once you have that embedded base, those people, you're never going to be able to move them really. So.
If I may have a quick PS, I think my fan page, I'll just leave the Twitter. I really barely have any followers. Because I don't follow anybody, which is maybe. Anti-Twitter, also feel most of the people in this room, unless you have a natural affinity for really, you know, reading all this stuff, you kind of, there's part of me that is afraid of having, you know, 500 people I follow. Maybe you don't really follow them.
Okay.
Twitter has been paranoid.
So the thing about tweet, I think if you don't have very many followers, it might be worth it to take out the underscore. Okay. Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, it's a question of whether you think people would be searching for you.
But if I mean, you if search I just killed her name, wouldn't it come up?
No, Twitter is not searchable like that, really. No.
Everything on my.
But let me talk about Twitter for a minute, about the thing about following. One of the advantages of using TweetDeck is that you can create groups. So you can create a group of neighborhood friends, writer friends, YA, you know, journalists. So what I have is I have people I read, and then I have a gigantic group that's like 10,000 people, and then I have one that's much smaller that's the people that I look at my whole huge group, I just scan through it from time to time, but people I read much more closely. So one of the advantages of TweetDeck is you can have these groups so that it's much easier. The thing about following is if you follow no one, people are like, she's a jerk. She can talk, but she can't listen. She doesn't care what other people have to say. It's a turnoff. Another thing is a lot of ways that you can make people interested in you is by following them. And a lot of times people will look at your stuff. If they see you following them, they'll look you up. Like somebody was just emailed me the other day and was like, oh, I looked at your blog because I saw that you followed me on Twitter. So it's a way to reach out to people. So a great thing to do, like in all your free time, is to be like, oh, I'm foodie guy writing about Mideast food. Let me see what's going on there. And just like try to follow as many people that you can that seem to be in your area of interest. And that will build the number of people who follow you. So by following them, they're more likely to follow you. And so that's how it builds. With someone like Andy Borowitz, you will see he's following, I mean, I don't know about him specifically, but somebody who's like, you know, Ashton Kutcher or somebody, they will follow very few people, and gigantic numbers of people will follow them. But most people, it's much closer, because following, and the thing is, following, it's interesting to see what other people write. I mean, people always say to me, oh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to read about what a lot of people had for breakfast. It's like, it's really interesting what's on Twitter. It's a really quick, easy way to get really good information and to like get a feel for the world in a different way. It's super powerful. But you really have to follow people in order to get that effect, because you have to have kind of a, there kind of has to be enough mass there that they can create kind of an energy. Like I remember thinking like, what's going on with Michael Jackson? Like something's happening with Michael Jackson. Like I wasn't really paying attention. I'm like, eh, something's happening with Michael Jackson. And then it was like, oh my gosh. Because you can sort of feel it coming. Yeah.
Where did your tweets, right now, I think I might get off Twitter for the moment, because when I get a random follower, it comes to my regular email.
Okay, that's just your preferences. If you just go to your account, just change your preferences. It'll say, like, settings or something, and just say, it will say, like, email me when someone subscribes, and just change it to don't email me when someone subscribes. Yeah. Yes.
I'm hesitating about asking this because I'm rank amateur. I'm very old, and like 95, and I've published this book which took 8 years. But and I understand this Facebook, which I don't even know about, but it's there, and there's a lot of reviews and stuff. And I don't know which one to do now if I'm going to go for.
Right.
I hope this isn't taking up too much time.
But you're like, if there's one thing, what would be the one thing that you would do? What kind of book did you write?
I wrote an historical novel.
A historical novel.
30s, the Depression and stuff like that. You know?
I think I would try Twitter, if I were you. And try to get into the...
But I can't use Facebook as it exists now.
You can, but you would just have to set it up on Facebook. It's just more... It's easier to start using Twitter, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so if I was going to start one place...
Not a blog.
A blog is a lot of work. Do you want to do a lot of work, or you want to start very simple?
What do you mean by a lot of work?
Well, you know what, go to the seminar that they're going to have here and get a better sense of what would be involved. If you're willing to do anything, a blog is best, because a blog is the most, and everything else can point to a blog, and a blog is the most searchable. But a blog is the most time consuming. Just because for it to be good, it takes a lot of...
So it would be better than Twitter.
If you would do it. I think it would be better than Twitter. But yeah. But you should... Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is the aim of a lot of bloggers to eventually have ads on their blogs? Is that going on? And do you foresee this changing the general positive attitude of writers writing blogs?
It's really hard to make real money off of a blog. You know, I know people who do it. I don't think that, and like a lot of mommy blogs are all monetization. All they are basically is like trying to get people to go so that they can sell ads. But the content there, I don't know why anybody goes there because they're just not interesting. They're just all product reviews and ads. Somebody said to me, oh, why don't you have ads on your blog? You know, like, why aren't you taking that money? I'm like, because it's one gigantic ad for me and my book. I don't dilute that with Procter & Gamble or whatever. So it's really kind of tricky and time-consuming to do that. It's really, and unless it's a very big blog, you really don't get real money from it. So I think a lot of bloggers have really sort of just decided that they're...
So it's not
It's not frowned upon if it's done well. It can be done well, but it changes the feeling of a blog to have ads. I mean, on the one hand, it shows that it's a healthy blog because only a healthy blog really can attract ads. But it changes the feel of a blog. I mean, one thing is to look at a bunch of blogs and to see how you feel about it and how, you know, if you'd feel comfortable with it yourself.
No, but that isn't the desire of writers to have a blog to make money. It's not
how. No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
What do you do about misinformation? And I'm talking about three kinds of misinformation. One, misinformation that's put out there about yourself, somebody else who has done misinformation about themselves, you know, that they actually did not go to McDowell, or there's a factual thing that they put out and, you know, this bridge was actually 17 miles long and not 24 miles long. I mean, what do you do about those three kinds of information, just misinformation?
Well, I don't think you have to be the policeman for the blogosphere or the internet. The thing that got the most factual things wrong was the New York Times. Unless it's some like whopping big thing, I think I would just, I don't know. There hasn't really been that much.
So it's not a worry.
I don't think it's a worry for most people.
You need some more.
Oh, no. I think we're just about done. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. One more or two more? Or is everybody ready to go out and sign up for Twitter? Okay, one more.
On your fan page, you have all these cool agree, disagree, all this stuff. Do you put photo things, or do you think about whether to do that?
I should do photos because photos are, people love photos, and I just don't because I don't, I'm not that attracted to photos, and I don't, I should. That's definitely something that would probably make it more interesting and engaging for people. Yes?
What do you think about repurposing your stuff for the new iPad technology?
I just got an iPad. I just think it's going to be gigantic.
It is.
And so, which is why I wanted to get one, because I'm like, I want to understand like what's happening with this technology. I don't know exactly what to expect, but it's going to be cool.
Can you read your blog?
Yeah, it just looks like a regular.
So you don't have to do anything different.
No, it'll just come up just like a regular website. If you had a lot of flash, I think it doesn't read a flash, right?
Yeah.
So if you had a lot of flash, it could interfere with that.
Just on its way out.
Yeah. So.
Twitter,
yeah.
But which is more read, Twitter or blog? Which is more subscribed to?
That's a question that that can't really be answered, I think.
No. But Twitter has become very popular.
Twitter is becoming very, very popular.
And blog isn't it diminishing then?
No. I don't think so, really. They're both, they just have different audiences and kind of serve different purposes. They're read in different ways. Okay, one last one.
Is this your Facebook page? Because when you showed your Facebook page, you had a setup that looked very unique. A lot of the Facebook pages.
Oh, yes, I did have somebody design that for me. And it's not finished yet, so it's kind of like that's still in progress. Yeah, this is a guy who actually knows what he's doing. But this is not, it's... Yeah, he changed, that's what he did, is he made it more, it needs to be changed. Yeah.
But do you have to know their special
API and all that? Yeah. I think like a regular person could not make it look like this. I think that I needed to have professional help. If you, but I mean, like, this is what it normally looks like if you just go to, this is much more what, like, that would have looked like before. And I need to have this page fixed as well, but we were just starting at that one, so that could be the template.
What was his name?
I don't know. I have kind of a weird setup with him, so I don't know if he's, like, taking other people, but I can find out. Okay. Just email me through my blog.
Is this your Facebook profile page?
No, no, this is my fan page.
Oh, that's your fan page?
That's my fan page. Okay, so I'll show you. One I was showing before was this thing, yeah. The wall. This is welcome, but this is all the fan page.
And where did you become a fan?
Well, funny you should ask that, because I was like, hey, dude, I think we... It says it down... Where does it say that?
It's because you already are a fan. I think that's why it doesn't say it.
I don't know. But anyway, I mentioned that to him, too. Yeah, but the welcome page, you should definitely have be able to do it there. See there, where does it say? Yeah, see, it needs to be bigger. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if you're going to have it specially designed, that should be a very big option. And also, like, I want people to sign up for my newsletter. So, yeah. So, anyway, you're seeing kind of a beta version there.
What is RSS? What is follow RSS?
You know what? RSS is on the way out. Just ignore it. Just ignore it. I'm taking out the references to RSS on my site because it does not. Everybody thought it was going to sort of transform blog reading, and no one's really using it, and it's distracting. I mean, like, because what a lot of people say to me about my blog is they're like, "Oh, she has 35,000 subscribers to her blog." I have 35,000 RSS subscribers to my blog. I mean, I have hundreds of thousands of people who read my blog. So it's kind of this number that it confuses people who don't know what RSS is. So I'm taking it out. A web page. What do you mean by a web page?
A home page. A website. www.nameofthebook.com.
Yeah.
If you have that, you also need a web page.
A website.
For the author.
Well, this is what you were asking. The way some people handle it is they have like their author page. And then they have the blog inside it, or they could have different things for each book. So it would be like, you know, Jane Doe, Dick and Jane, George and Spot. Yeah, for each book.
But there's only one book right now.
If there's only one book?
I'm saying.
Right.
If you have a www.titlethebook.com, do you also need a www.johndoe.com?
Do you think that you're going to write other books?
It's my wife, and hopefully yes. And I don't.
Then she should have it be her name. She should have it be her name. If she's going to write other books, like Catherine Harrison, her author website is called The Binding Chair, because when she created it, that was the book that was coming out. But now she's like, that was like 6 books ago. Or maybe she's changed it by now. But so if you're going to write other books, you want to have it be your name.
Let's say that won't be for a while. That won't be for a couple of years, at least a few years.
If it's a couple of years, she should have it be her name.
Yeah,
it'll go quickly.
Both go to the same
yes. 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 Yeah, you should have somebody that will have a redirect for the URL. Good point. I forgot about that.